of love. Because even benevolence, there's an affection implied. Meaning, in the sense of, it's not just some choice you make. It is something that compels people. Because I could choose to love my enemies. I get that. Because you have to kind of make a choice to love them. Because they're not lovable. They're your enemies. You know what I mean? And your instinct is to not love them. Is to, you know, go to war with them. Or some lesser form of conflict, right? But to bless them? That's why those things are so revolutionary. Bless them to curse you. Do good to them. They hate you and despitefully use you. That's why the things Jesus taught were so revolutionary. There were hints of it in the Old Testament, but really to the level he took it. Like they asked him, well, who's our neighbor? And then he gives the story of the Good Samaritan. And I think one of the underlying subtexts of that parable is the fact that the Samaritan, who treats the man who is hurt along the way, who takes him to the inn and pays for his for all his needs, to take it for his being taken care of. There's a word there that I'm groping for. He pays for all that and bandages him and so on and so forth. But the implication is that the man who is hurt along the road, I believe it's implied that he is an Israelite. And the Israelites hate the Samaritans at the time of Jesus. The Samaritan sees his enemy, one who hates him, hurt along the road, and he has compassion on him. See, that's the love of Christ, to be able to feel love for enemies. The things they do make us very angry. But look at Paul. He appeared to be the enemy of God. Now, what would have hating him, what good would that have done for anyone's soul? Because we don't see as God sees. That's why love hopes all things. Really, because I want to be able to, and then maybe this is a sense in which I'm not like Christ. I'll tell you what, I am the enemy of their gospel. I am the enemy of their teaching. And I always try to add, well, maybe if they change. Well, you know, that's the whole point. For that sake, I do love them. And by preaching against it, that's the best way I can love them, to rebuke them. I don't know how sweet words are going to change anything. And honestly, rebuke may not change anything, because maybe it's not to be changed. But Christ had pity on his enemies. He had compassion on them. I think of, I mentioned recently, the prophet Jonah. When he was bitter against God for having not destroyed Nineveh. And he says, look, there's all these people in this city. They don't know their right hand from their left. It was Jonah's enemy. Hey, you want me to just kill him? And all the cattle, too? I mean, there's animals there. God takes care for animals. Does he care for animals? Well, he does take care of them, you know. I mean, the thing is, he could undo it all in a second, and it really would be no skin off his back. He could just, no universe, okay? We're all gone. And he brought us from nothing. He could send us back to nothing. But the fact that a created thing would look on another created thing and say, you know, destroy it, kill it, hurt it. Now, God created it to be like that. But he wants us, as his sons, to consider that. Look at that. When you create something, if God has created things, or and you're part of it even, because remember, we are created. We aren't the creator, God, obviously. But look at, consider that thing. You know, there's some sort, there is, you know, there's an ethical responsibility towards other things. And if we become one with God and so on and so forth, and all the power, and we have to, there's certain things he wants us to see. The love of Christ, which passes human knowledge. I mean, God has all the knowledge of it in the world. But we got to know this unknowable love. I think it passes knowledge because it goes beyond things that are just knowledge and choice and all that stuff. Black and white. It goes into the area of feelings and irrational things. Just like irrational hatred and irrational love. To him be glory. I love verse 20. Look at all he is able, exceeding above all that we ask or think. He's able to do. Think about that. Everything that I ask, I could ask God. And of course, he could do far better than that. I could say, God, give me the universe. I said, God, give me 100 universes. He could do much more than that. He's able. Okay? Now think about the things as a Christian which God has put in us that we want and desire. We must know. I want to strengthen your faith. You must know he is ready and is going to give it to you. Don't forget the doubting stuff. It's worthless. It doesn't do you any good. It's just counterproductive. It's a waste of your time, and you're wasting God's time too. But if you're going to doubt, you might as well just quit. But if you are of God, it isn't in you to quit, is it? You can't quit because you know God has called you. You hear his word. You obey his gospel. Fret not yourself. God is patient and long-suffering. All right? We're all waiting for the hope of righteousness. Even those who have obtained it are hoping for it for our behalf. You know what I mean? They want to see us all come in. So it's like, just because you see someone who seems, wow, you know, they're so much like the Lord, right? And then you see someone like me, and you could say, well, you know, gosh, he's obtained a lot of things. I mean, he obviously says that he's not, and I can see ways in which he isn't, right? He's, you know, definitely not the fullness of God right there. Paul, that guy. Okay. But, you know, he's got more than I do. Well, just look at the example and see. I am as you are. And we will, and if we carry on in faith and stay in faith and add to our faith, we will obtain everything that we want from God. We who are the elect. Because we don't want things that the world wants from God. The world wants things from God for the world. They want, give us world peace.